1000-watt News Radio 1180 WHAM proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show at 222-1180, star 1180, a free call for Verizon Wireless subscribers, or the One Communications line at 1-800-295-1180. Now alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on 50,000-watt 1180 WHAM.
Good morning, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the chips in the PC. It is Sunday, the 14th of October, Anno Domini 2007. And you, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Wright.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 7 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing you news, views, stuff you can use, a couple of things you can lose.
And you lost it already.
And I already lost it. We can't, we don't seem capable of getting connected here to the network, so... you know, it's only a multi-zillion watt station, so.
we'll, tell us how you really feel.
Yeah, that's all right. That's
yeah. All right. Hey, Rob, call the engineer.
Yeah, right. For a few minutes during Microsoft Corporation CEO Steve Ballmer's appearance at the Gartner Symposium IT Expo conference, emotionless management speak gave way to a mother's frustration
this
with the Vista operating system.
Love it.
I'm one of those early adopters of Vista, said Yvonne Genovese, an analyst who was interviewing Ballmer along with fellow analyst David Smith on stage at a conference forum. My daughter comes in one day and says, hey, Mom, my friend has Vista, and it has these neat little things called gadgets. I need those, said Ballmer. I love your daughter. You're not going to like her mom in about 2 minutes, said Genovese, while the crowd laughed. She went on to explain that she installed Vista for her daughter and 2 days later went right back to using the XP operating system. It's safe. It works, all the hardware is fine, and everything is great, she said of XP. Genovese also argued that her experience with Vista is broadly shared. What we're seeing and what we're hearing from users is a very similar thing. It's difficult to implement. What should we be seeing that we're not seeing? Let's start with the end user, said Ballmer. Your daughter saw a lot of value. She's 13, Genovese shot back. Ballmer was good-natured about the critique as he defended his operating system. Users appreciate the value that we put into Vista, he said. But as with earlier operating system releases, there is always tension between the value the end user sees and, frankly, the software developers see and the value that we can deliver to IT. One of the top requirements for IT customers is the most secure release of Windows you can humanly make, said Ballmer. We have had better security, we've had fewer vulnerabilities, fewer issues with Windows Vista in its first 6 months than any OS that preceded it.
Because nobody has it.
Well, I think the big thing here, at the very end, he says, Ballmer says, machines are constantly getting better. It's important to remember that as well. Genovese said, good, I'll let you come in home and with me and install it for me.
Yeah, and it was hacked in beta, the final beta.
Yeah, it was hacked. What he's not saying there is, of course, they could have added all of that stuff to XP.
Yeah.
And nobody would have complained. The problem, of course, is, as we've said before, is Microsoft doesn't make any money if you don't buy a new operating system. Yep. That's what that's all about. The only way they're going to make you buy a new operating system is to change the interface, because otherwise, why would you buy it?
Exactly. And they've raised the bar so drastically to, you know, the system requirements and everything else. And oh, by the way, a lot of other stuff that works with XP won't work with Vista.
Right.
And all you're paying for is GUI.
Right.
All that money is just going for the oohs and ahs. Unlike when we went from 98 to XP. I mean, we gained NTFS. Now the memory limit was gone. No more 128. As much as you threw XP, it took advantage of.
Right.
Now, when you try to do comparisons of XP to Vista, there are none.
Right.
What's the big driving reason other than Bill Gates getting richer?
It almost seems as though Microsoft, rather than being in the business of making operating systems, is in the business of making money.
Well, yes, that's exactly
yeah,
the
that's
look.
What we're saying.
Once a company becomes public, it only has one job: maximize profits for the shareholders. That is their job. And who is Microsoft's customer?
Corporations.
The shareholders.
Shareholders.
The shareholders are their customers.
Yep.
There is no other person they need to please, and no other person they want to please. It is the shareholder.
You're right.
And so, consequently, and what is the product that Microsoft brings to their customers?
Cash.
Us. We are the product.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Our cash is the product they bring to their customers. So what we want is at the absolute dead bottom of their list. That's true of any company that is publicly traded. I don't care what it is. And Microsoft is just an example. I'm not singling them out, and I'm not dumping on them. That is true of any company that is publicly traded.
That's one reason I'm interested in this, that Chrysler is now owned by a private. What is it? It's a holding firm.
It's a holding firm.
But it's been taken private, so interesting things could happen.
Now. Well, we'll see. We'll see if the holding firm has shareholders of its own. I don't know how that all works. But yeah, that's why, you know, that's true of anything. Anyway, we'll go to the phones now. Our first caller is Marvin on a cell phone. Welcome, Marvin. What's your question?
I have a computer screen that changes intermittently from the regular white and color to magenta. It's been like been going like that for about a year. I've changed the UBS cords. I've done small things like that. I'm wondering what's causing this problem, and can it be fixed?
10-to-1 odds, it's one of the two. If this is an old style monitor.
The monitor is brand new. It's within the last 2 years.
Does
the
it have?
The computer is a little old.
Does it have one video cable coming out of it or three?
I don't know.
It's most likely the video cable. What happens a lot of times is the video cable comes out of the back of the monitor, and then people will put the monitor on their desk and sort of shove it up against the wall and then kink that cable. And
I changed the cable.
The video cable.
What?
You changed the video cable?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, you already changed it. So it could be that it's going magenta, one of the guns
in the monitor.
Yeah, for projecting that is going bad. Now, you say this monitor is relatively new?
Yeah, it's about 2 years old.
Unfortunately, that's not new.
Well, it's a 19-inch. I had a regular 15-inch before. It's a 19-inch flat screen.
Right. If it was under warranty, you could go back to the company and have them fix it under warranty.
Have you tried taking it over to a friend's house and seeing if it works okay over there?
No, I haven't.
You might want to take it over to a friend's house, because with monitors, you can just quick hook them up. You don't even have to shut the computers off and see if it displays the same symptoms on his machine.
If it does, it'll
tell you that it's the monitor. Otherwise, it might be the video card. I'm more tending to believe that it's the actual monitor than the video card. Because usually video cards, either they work or they don't. They really don't control the gun colors.
When you lose a color, it's usually a frayed wire that's cutting out on the RGB line.
Somebody said to me maybe it could be the motherboard.
No.
Well, it might be the video card if the video card is on the motherboard.
But the video card doesn't control colors. The video card doesn't, as far as... Yeah. Things going magenta, that's all due to the monitor and how it displays it.
So you think it's the monitor?
I think it's the monitor. I'd lean more towards the monitor. That's why I say take it over to our friend's house and see if it does it there too.
And then check the warranty on the monitor to see if it happens to still be under warranty. Although most monitors are only 1 year, so you might be out of warranty if it's 2 years old.
Check it out and let us know.
It's annoying how new things get old so fast.
Mm-hmm.
You know, 6 months is new. You know, a year is old.
Well, laptops. I mean, laptops. Folks used to buy them and expect to get 5 to 7 years out of them. Now the life expectancy on a laptop is 3 years.
Right.
So, you know, after that, it's considered old.
All right. Our next caller is Frank from Andover, New York. Welcome, Frank. What's your question?
Every once in a while, I get an email and I find out that 17 or 15, maybe 30 other people got the exact same email. And then they're email address ends up in my address book. Is there any way I can prevent that from happening?
What email program are you using?
Outlook Express.
Well, there's the first thing. Stop using Outlook Express.
Okay.
There is a preference.
Go to Thunderbird.
Use Thunderbird instead. There are so many holes in Outlook Express for letting viruses through, letting mass mailing viruses through. We strongly recommend that you don't use Outlook Express. There's a preference in most email programs to automatically add recipients to your address book. Sometimes it's not the full address book. Sometimes you have a previous recipient list. So if someone's address is in a message you get, all those addresses get added to your recipients list.
Okay.
I don't remember if that's a preference in Outlook or if it just happens automatically.
Okay, but you're suggesting Thunderbird.
Yes.
Yeah, much safer alternative to Outlook and Outlook Express for receiving email.
And how do I do that?
GetThunderbird.com.
Okay.
And then when you download and install Thunderbird, it will import all of your email and settings and addresses from Outlook Express.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Sure. I find that happening a lot too on the Mac mail program. There's a previous recipients list, and it's annoying that if you spell somebody's name wrong, it ends up on your previous recipients list, and then when you try to spell that same name again, it always finds the wrong one first.
Yeah, right.
So in Apple Mail, there's a previous recipients menu command that brings up that list of previous recipients, and you can edit that and delete them and clean out the bad ones.
Nice. Nice. You know what? Not only are we not getting network access. Have you got network access?
No, I'm no IP.
Yeah. So not only are we not getting the it there, there's no wireless anywhere around here today either. No. Usually I get three or four wireless choices.
I've been seeing Rochester Public Access Wi-Fi Network 4 popping up every now and then, but I can't connect to it.
Right.
Yeah. So yeah, the other end of this blue wire has a problem.
Yeah. Trace that out, will you, for heaven's sake? It's got a link light, but that just means that the wire is connected.
Yeah. Yeah, we're getting no IP from the other end, so wherever the router probably needs reset.
Yeah, yeah. Have I got time for another call? I do. Our next caller is Linda from Greece. Welcome, Linda. What's your question?
Yes. Hi, Nick. How are you?
Good, Linda. How are you?
I'm just fine. Been a long time since I talked to you.
I know. It's been very bleak for me, too.
I got a question. I start up my computer. I've got Windows XP Pro on it. It was rebuilt about a year ago. When I start up, I have icons on the bottom, you know, like my antivirus and all that, so I can click on it. Sometimes it takes maybe 10, 15 minutes for the icons to show up, but the computer shows up and all that. But every time, if I shut it off and then I turn it back on again, different icons show up at the same time. Why does it take so long for those icons to start up?
There are a couple of reasons for that. First, make sure that your machine is clean. Dance the tango. I know you do that regularly.
Do.
The other thing is, it depends on which icons those are.
Well, it's like my antivirus, ABG antivirus,
right.
ABG's spyware. I have my volume control. It's just basically those.
And there's nothing else hidden in the arrow behind, you know, the little arrow there.
I went into the custom notification, and I put down hide all those. And I've only got...
Well, that's part of your problem. They're starting up in the same order they always did, but since you don't see them, you just see blank space.
Yeah.
Well, I went into MSN Config and took a lot of them out. You know, how do I get rid of those things is my question.
You have to go to whatever program put them there and uninstall it.
Yeah.
Yeah, most of the things that are installed are either in the startup or the MS config or whatever.
Yeah, the MS config, you should be able to uncheck them and they won't start up in the startup program.
Right, but if you do that, you should be all right. Make sure they're checked and make sure that they're not starting up in... And add remove programs. If you actually remove them, they'll go away forever. All right, we got to take a break. Rob is shaking his fist at me and making rude Italian street gestures. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Chris Wright, Rob Linton, Mina Francesco, and you. 20 minutes after the hour at Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Wright.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And in 24 minutes after the hour, you are listening to Soundbites. Hey, all you Mac OS people and all you Linux people, you smug bunch of sons of guns. It looks like Microsoft this week said it would patch Windows to reduce a risk of a new kind of web-based security vulnerability, but security researchers say that other operating systems are probably at risk, too. In fact, Nathan McFetters, one of the researchers who's been studying the problem most closely, said he hopes to present more details on how other Unix-based operating systems, like Linux and the Mac OS X, may be susceptible to what is known as URI, Uniform Resource Identifier, Protocol Handler, flaws. He said he's not yet found a way to run authorized code on Unix-based operating systems, but he and his fellow researchers had discovered a number of issues that looked like they could be grounds for further research. The problem McFetters and others have been researching over the past few months has to do with the URI protocol handling technology used to launch programs from within web browsers. Perhaps the best known of these protocols is Mail2, which is used to launch the mail client from within the browser. So when you go to a browser and you click on a link, in the background, it really says Mail2 colon and the name. And that Mail2 runs your mail program, essentially, in the foreground. But any software developer can register their own application with the operating system. This leads to a somewhat risky behavior as programs are launched within the browser, sometimes without proper checks on the ways they're being executed. To date, hackers have found ways to run off unauthorized software on the PC by sneaking commands into specially crafted web links that use the URI protocols of several well-known applications. Microsoft had originally said it was up to software developers to make sure their programs check the links so that they don't include malicious code, but this week it agreed to put some checks within the Windows operating system as well. McFetter said that these protocols are registered unnecessarily often and with little thought given to security. Even if it can't be used to install unauthorized software, a poorly designed URI protocol registration can end up giving attackers access to data and applications that they shouldn't be able to see. Last month, researchers showed how a flaw in Google's Picasa software could give an attacker access to any Picasa photo stored on the victim's hard drive. And URI protocol handler flaws have also been found in Adobe, Firefox, and Outlook Express. So those of us who are using Linux and the Mac should not be quite as smug as we have been in the past. They need to be fixed as well as Windows. All right, our next caller is Lynn from Chilai. Welcome, Lynn. What's your question?
Hi, I have a desktop that runs that I can get my TV through, and it runs fine. But with the browser, it shuts off after 10 minutes. It disconnects me. Now, I have two laptops that are wireless and run off the same system, and they work fine. It's just this desktop will only connect to the Internet for maybe 5 or 10 minutes, and then it disconnects.
So it's the web browser shutting off and not the entire computer?
Correct. Yeah, because I have Media Center, and, you know, that works fine. I watch, you know, the TV through it. It works fine. And LimeWire, that works fine, too. So it doesn't disconnect me from either of those.
It's well, that's probably your problem. LimeWire is rife with spyware, viruses, Trojan horses, and malicious software. And everything else is illegal.
You're right.
Very strong recommendation to not use LimeWire.
Okay.
Virtually everything on it is illegal. There are legal uses for LimeWire, but hardly anyone uses a legal use of LimeWire.
Right.
And it installs so much spyware and crap into your system, and so many of the songs you think you're downloading are really spyware and viruses. That's how they masquerade. And
right.
That's how
everybody's had the experience of downloading a song. They double click on it. It doesn't play. They think, bad download. In fact, it was probably a Trojan or a virus of some sort that has done its business and didn't need to play a song for you.
So that's probably what's happening. There's so much spyware and malicious software running in the background on your computer that the web browser dies because it can't handle it all.
Right. Let us suggest that you dance the Security Tango at securitytango.com. Click on the Let's Dance button.
You may need to download the programs on another computer if this one keeps shutting you out.
Right. And have somebody burn them to CD for you. And dance the tango, completely clean out your system, and see if that solves it. And, of course, uninstall LimeWire, and then the tango will uninstall all of the other software that comes along with
What's
it.
What's your spyware record now, Dave? 150,000?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
150,000 pieces of spyware running
on one machine, yeah. It was a wonder the thing was even running. I mean,
so we hate to give you the bad news, Lynn, but I think that's where you need to start at least.
And it's not limited to LimeWire. It's virtually all the peer-to-peer networks, Kazaa, especially Kazaa, Morpheus.
BearShare.
Some of the programs, was it BearShare? Some of them claim not to have any spyware in the program itself.
Right.
But on the peer networks you're logging into.
You're connecting to other people's machines, and they latch onto other songs.
Well, if you pay attention when you're installing LimeWire, you see that agreement that you have to click OK for. In that agreement, it says you agree to install a bunch of other things. So it's not spyware because you agreed to it.
Yeah, they call it marketing data or demographic data.
Yeah, right.
Whatever.
Right.
It's not illegal to do because you're agreeing to it.
Exactly.
But it puts so much junk on your computer, it just bogs it down and
causes
other problems.
But it is illegal because you're sharing songs that you didn't pay for.
Well, that part's illegal.
Well, the woman last week, 2 weeks ago, fined $220,000 for 9 illegal songs on her computer.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. She was one of the first people to actually take it to court. Most people settle out of court. The RIAA has sent out thousands of letters saying we're going to sue you. And most people settle. From what we've read on the net, the settlement's about $1,000 a song. So, this lady took it to court, challenged it in court, and lost because she was doing things illegally.
Right.
She downloaded songs illegally, and she was sharing them illegally.
Right. Right.
All right. Our next caller is Tab from Henrietta, New York. Welcome, Tab. What's your question?
Hello.
Hi.
Presently, I've gone to Linux a few times. I've had my trials with Windows XP. I've had issues, and I wouldn't mind trying to go back to Linux again. And one of the issues I had in the past was trying to get it to work wirelessly. Presently, I have a laptop. I have an extra hard drive with that. I have VMware, so I can help do a transition from Windows to Linux, so I can run them both at the same time.
Right.
But what wireless issues can I expect, or what should I look for to get the wireless to run properly?
What make is your laptop?
It's an HP.
How old is it?
It's probably about 3 years old.
Is it built-in wireless, or is there a wireless card?
It's built-in. I wouldn't mind buying a wireless card if I needed to.
Okay.
You said that's usually the problem, is finding a driver for your wireless card.
There are two ways you can go with that. Whatever version of Linux you go with, Ubuntu, PC Linux OS, and Fedora, I don't care.
I was looking at the CentOS 5.0.
Yeah, no.
No?
Okay,
thank you.
Here's the thing. CentOS is a free version of RHEL, the Red Hat Enterprise Linux. It is really designed for businesses and for use by somebody who really knows what they're doing setting it up. It's very complex. It's very big. It's very powerful. And in fact, on several servers that I run, I'm running CentOS. But on desktops, I personally prefer Ubuntu. That's what I'm running right here. I also like PC Linux OS and a couple of others, but really, I mostly tend personally to recommend Ubuntu. 7.04 is out. 7.10 should be out next week. And generally, now I'm running an Asus laptop. When I installed Linux, it found the wireless drivers, no trouble. Absolutely okay. No trouble at all. The problem that you run into is that you need to know what wireless card you've got. If it's not recognized immediately by the system, then you've got some hoops to jump through. One of the nice things about Linux is that there is a program called NDISWRAPPER, NDISWRAPPER, all one word. And what that lets you do is download the Windows driver for that wireless card and essentially run it inside this NDISWRAPPER program. It's a little slower, but then again, 99% of the time, that's not a big deal. I mean, by a little slower, I mean milliseconds.
Okay.
So if I were you, I would take a look at Ubuntu. Like I said, 7.04 is out right now. 7.10 is out next week.
Was it 1.2?
Ubuntu, UBUNTU.
Okay.
At ubuntulinux.com, ubuntu.org, ubuntu.com. I think it's like 100 addresses. So Ubuntu is one of the ones that I very much recommend.
Okay.
Give it a try.
And continuing to run the VMware, whether I run it on Linux or Windows, I think I prefer to run it on Linux.
Mm-hmm.
But do you think in the background I should be, will I have to run whatever version of Windows that I had, will I have to run that forever so I have portability?
It depends on what you're trying to port. I run Linux at work, and except for the new document format Microsoft just introduced, I swap Word and PowerPoint and Excel documents with people all day, and they have no idea I'm not on Windows.
Okay.
If you get a little more esoteric, like Adobe Illustrator or whatever, that might be a problem. But for the standard things, there's a product that comes with Linux called OpenOffice, openoffice.org, and it reads and writes all but the very newest document format from Windows.
And that's probably coming tomorrow.
And that'll be coming shortly. They're working on it. It's just not out yet. And so that, to me, that's the way to go. It's also completely free. You could also run that on Windows, by the way. It's completely free, and it does 99% of what Microsoft Office does. So unless you need any of the some of the really, really esoteric functions inside Office, then OpenOffice is a great product.
Okay. And I can continue using our desktop to communicate to my other computers that have XP.
Yep. For everybody else, our desktop is a R, the letter R in the word desktop, short for remote desktop, lets you log into a Windows system and actually run Windows on the other machine over the internet somewhere, except it shows up, the screens, the GUI shows up on your desktop.
It's as if you were sitting in front of that remote computer.
Right. It's obviously a little slower because it's running over the internet, but it works great. In fact, I normally use it here when somebody has a Windows question, I can look things up under Windows, except for this week because we have no internet. Sorry, I just thought I'd point that out yet again.
I do.
Well, yeah.
You both.
Thank you.
I've got it working fine.
The corporate internet is working. Our side internet isn't.
Right. Right. I don't know why, but it's not.
Well, we could plug the corporate internet into this switch and then split it to the rest of us. They probably wouldn't
that's
like that.
That's true. No, they probably wouldn't. At any rate, that's the deal. And I would suggest, exactly. Should have just done it, you idiot. But at any rate, that's the way I would go with that. I love running Linux. I'm having a lot of fun with it. It does everything I want to do, and it's free. I like free.
And speaking of OpenOffice, I've never heard of anyone that tried OpenOffice and said, no, I really need Microsoft Office. I've never heard of that.
Yeah. Mm.
Usually when you look at the $400 price tag of Microsoft Office.
Or $700 if you want the
Office Pro.
Office Pro.
Mm-hmm. And then OpenOffice is how much again?
Free. And there is a native version for the Mac called NeoOffice.
NeoOffice, so it looks Mac-like, because that's some issue for Windows and Mac users, is that they're used to the look of their own OS.
Right. And NeoOffice is OpenOffice. It usually comes out a few days after the next OpenOffice release, because they translate it and make it look more Mac-like. So it takes a couple of days to catch up. But I'll tell you what, I'm running NeoOffice on my Mac. I'm running OpenOffice on my Linux and Windows boxes, and I love it.
Yeah. And then for the other Mac users, Apple has their new iWork package out now that is more geared for home users. The big thing with Office is it's pretty much geared for business users, and that's what everyone uses in business.
Yeah, that's the big thing, is that most people don't need all of the function that's in Office, and I don't know why you pay $400 for that when you don't really need it. But
yeah, so Apple's iWork has a really great word processor and even page layout program called Pages that will read and write Word files. So somebody can give you a Word file, you can edit it and send it back in Word format, just like with OpenOffice, they won't know. It's got a presentation program called Keynote. It's got a spreadsheet called Numbers. You know, so for 90% of the average home users, iWork is more than enough, and it's only $80.
Yep. Right, and OpenOffice is
free.
Free. Yep. All right, we are going to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Wright, Chris Reich, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 39 minutes after the hour. You are listening to Soundbites, and it is on 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Wright.
I'm Chris Reich.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, you're listening to Soundbites. Before we get back to the phones, I should tell you about Microsoft has decided that their OEM and retail partners will offer Windows XP for an additional 5 months until June 30th, 2008, after receiving complaints that customers are not ready to cut off and switch to Vista. Just a couple of weeks ago, we reported that Vista XP would be available till January. OEMs have been telling Microsoft now they're going till June. OEMs have been telling Microsoft that a small set of customers need to run Windows XP for longer than the year limit initially set. Microsoft initially told those partners they could offer XP until January 31st, 2008, a year after the general availability of Windows Vista. In retrospect, we've had Vista for almost a year. In retrospect, the original policy may have been a bit too aggressive, they said, and we have been hearing back from customers, largely through our OEM partners, that was the case. Some customers, especially small businesses, don't have the benefit of an IT staff to help them evaluate and deploy new versions of the operating system. As a result, the transition is more challenging for them. Despite the recent surge of OEMs and PC makers already offering customers the ability to downgrade their new Vista machines to Windows XP, the uprising is only coming from a small set of customers, and the extension should alleviate any concerns and give customers and OEM partners comfort, said Microsoft. There's little chance that the June 30th date will be extended. I'm telling you what, I don't think that five-month extension is going to be enough. I think they're going to extend it again because there'll be enough pressure and because the sales of Vista have been so horribly slow.
There's going to be way too much pressure. No good reason.
And now they've set a precedent. They've extended support once. They'll can extend it again.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
But on the other side of that, Vista's been out for a year. So almost a year, and they still haven't fixed the problems. Third-party companies still haven't updated drivers. No. I've read about big issues with the high-end NVIDIA cards. Now, you paid $600, $700 for a Super Whizbang card, and it won't work under Vista?
Yeah.
Yeah.
One of the problems that we're having at the E. Philip Saunders College of Business at the Rochester Institute of Technology is that, we run a lot of specialized programs that simply do not have Vista versions yet. And they don't work under Vista. So we've got all our faculty saying half our students are running Vista. We need to be running Vista. And I keep telling them, fine, but you're going to lose this and this and this and this. And then what are you going to do? I mean, you know, we can't do miracles. Yep. So until there are Vista versions,
you can't
of those programs, we're done.
And, we're done. You know, what big advantage are they gaining going from one to the other?
Right, right. Well, they're not gaining an advantage, really. They're just gaining new.
That's it. But what are they getting out of that new?
New. They get new.
That's all they're getting.
They get new. You happy now?
All they get is the cute, glowy, gooey, oh, I can see the windows behind the windows and all this other crap.
Yeah, but how do you really feel? You've got to stop holding back. Doggone it, I'm tired of you doing that.
I'm working on it.
All right. Our next caller is John from Penfield, New York. Welcome, John. What's your question?
Yes, hi. We have a Dell E310, I think it is, that is running the Windows XP Entertainment Edition software.
Yep.
And my son had a lockup yesterday, and when he powered off and restarted the computer, now it's coming up. There's no network connection. Can't run System Restore. I'm getting an error message when I try and run that. And there's just a host of other problems. I was wondering how I can, one, get System Restore to work, or two, I'm not quite sure how I can reload Windows because I don't think it came.
Well, wait 1 minute. Now, the thing is booting up at somewhat?
It boots up. It boots into Windows. I can run general applications.
All right, here's what you want to do. See if you can do this. When it's booting up, hit the F8 key.
Okay.
And you're going to have a menu there. The very first option is safe mode. If you go into safe mode, and then you go into programs, accessories, system tools, there is a system restore. And in there, you can go back a date. So you can pick a point, say, yesterday or a couple days before, previous, where there's a restore point.
Okay. When I tried to do that, mm-hmm. get into system restore, It brought up an error message that says, System Restore is not able to protect your computer. Please restart your computer, then run System Restore again. And I get that every time I try
now,
and restart.
Now, did you do this in safe mode?
I believe so, yes. I know I had it in safe mode yesterday, but I'm pretty sure I tried to run System Restore from there and got the same result. I even tried bringing up safe mode with the command line
mm-hmm.
and running it directly from the directory where the application.
Well, then what you might have to do is do a reinstall over Windows. And what you've got to do there is put your CD in and you boot it up. And the first time you go through, you know, it'll say install Windows. You accept that. You ignore the restore point at that point until after you hit the F8 key to agree to the license agreement. Then you will see on the screen down along the bottom to either install or restore. You restore then. So it's the second time that you see restore down along the bottom. You've already hit the F8 key to accept the agreement. Then that will install Windows over Windows.
And these instructions are on our website under Dave's Tips.
But he can't get at it because his computer
doesn't. And another machine, maybe.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Wright, Chris Wright, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 51 minutes after the hour. You are listening to Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Wright.
I'm Chris Wright.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 55 minutes after the hour, you're listening to Soundbites. And hey, it's time, kiddies. Get those footy jammies on. Grab your mug of hot cocoa. Sit in Indian fashion in a semicircle around the rocking chair. And if we can slap them awake, it's time for Story Hour with Uncle Dave. Uncle Dave. Uncle Dave!
Yeah. Okay. You really want me to get going, huh?
Go for it.
You know, I don't know. It must be something in the water people are drinking. Because I had another client. I guess, right, here's my whole story. Had somebody come in with a laptop. They bought it out west. And when they were bought, they believed the young little salesperson, I think he was selling bicycles last week in the other department, told him, oh yeah, you can get parts anywhere. They're all universal. Well, the person brings in the laptop and says, yeah, I need this DVD player in this laptop switched out. Sorry, I don't have them in stock, and I don't know if you can get it. The thing was already 4 years old. No. Well, I was told you just put one in. No, it doesn't work.
You could, but do you want it to work?
Well, it won't even fit.
Use a bigger hammer.
Yeah, I could do that, but this is a Mongrel brand with no labels on it, and it's like, what brand is it? I don't know. They said I bought it out there, and he says, oh, it's universal. Sorry, but it's not, buddy. I'd have to take it all apart because it's built into it and see if we can even get you one. Well, I was told that you could do this. I'm telling you, you can't. You know, it's just not going to happen.
Now, desktops are often pretty universal, but laptops are virtually always custom and proprietary.
Oh, well, this is the other thing that we got into. Well, don't you do custom builds? Yes, as far as systems, but not laptops. Nobody does custom build laptops. I'm sorry. Every person has a distributor that has them built to their specs, just like HP and Dell and the rest of them, and they put their label on them, like Acer and all these other.
Yeah, there's some white boxes you can buy where the you know, a little store might sell their own brand because they bought a pre-built machine and put their logo on it.
But they don't physically build them because the components are very unique to that particular case and that laptop. There's nothing universal. They just haven't gone that way like desktops. So laptops, you know, to make them slimmer and sleeker and everything else, and the size of screens, they're just different. So, no, they're not universal.
I actually had a Toshiba, Acer. I had a laptop in. The optical drive was a removable bay, so that helped. And I crammed an old Mac optical drive in. It worked fine.
You're lucky.
That was one of those weird ones that had an angle on it. We're going to give our little shots to both Uncle Dave and Uncle Steve. And we'll be back next week with another edition of Story Hour with Uncle Dave. All righty. Thank you very much. Now, we probably don't have time for a call, but I do have something I want to say very quickly. In the Ask Nick setup, one of the things that I do is I send out my email stuff. I'll talk about that next time. But one of the things I sent out was a website where this guy, we'll talk about it next time around. I guess we just don't have time for that right now. We'll talk about it when we come back. But right now, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back on the other side of the news, I'll finish my fascinating story about my website because that's all I'm interested in. And we'll have a lot more of your phone calls. So if you're on the line, please stay on the line. If you're not on the line, I don't know why you're not on the line. You should be on the line, so get on the line. You know the numbers, 222-1180, all those other numbers. So give us a call. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with Chris Reich, who once again is donating his time, his energy, his effort, his talent, his wisdom, his smile, and his body in here to help us out. And, of course, Rob Linton, who is almost awake over in there. You can almost see him awake. And I'm Nick Francesco. We will be back in just a couple of minutes with the greatest computer show in the known universe at 59 minutes after the hour at Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello. Satan. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm David Ray.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Wright.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And it's 6 minutes after the hour at Soundbites. The chat's back up, so all those of you who were not in the chat can now be in the chat. We seem to have internet connectivity, up to a point at least, so we'll see how that all goes. Things are semi-lovely in their own odd little way. Before we get back to the phones, I would like to read you something very interesting. Blogs were buzzing this week with reports that Windows users who thought they had automatic updates set to either not install or get permission before installing nonetheless had their machines patched and rebooted. Friday afternoon, the company posted a response on its website saying no changes were made to the automatic update mechanism, nor did any recent updates change automatic update settings. The company is looking into whether customers might have actually had their settings changed by Microsoft Office or Windows OneCare, because that would be so very different. It's still a Windows product. Hello, we have received some logs from customers and have so far been able to determine that their automatic update settings were not changed by any changes to the automatic update client itself, and also not changed by any updates installed by automatic update. That's a lot of words, update, for Microsoft to write down. We're still looking into this to see if another application is making this change during setup with user consent or if this issue is related to something else. This Microsoft's products are so complex, they don't even have any idea what changes what at this point. Company's asking anyone experiencing an issue to make contact with their customer support so that they can get more information. Meanwhile, in a separate posting, it was acknowledged that some people are having trouble manually installing updates after moving to the latest version of Windows Update. The issues Friday follow an earlier outcry over the discovery that Windows Update utility updates itself regardless of whether automatic updates are turned on. So that leads us to this week's question. Because every week we do a poll here on the Soundbites website. That's Soundbites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you. Last week's poll was about Microsoft's Health Vault. We had some interesting answers to that. But this week, it's about, has Microsoft updated behind your back? The choices are yes, no. Oh, like I pay attention. The Mac doesn't update. Oh, wait. And Linux updates are under my control. So far, we've had about 75 responses. So far, yes is number one, followed by Linux updates are under my control, followed by no, followed by, oh, like I pay attention. And down at the bottom with only 5 votes, the Mac doesn't update. Oh, wait. When you're done with that, there's a little yellow box underneath there. If you click on that, it will take you to my website. If you click on Give Us Your Opinions, it will take you to my website, AskNick.com. That's AskNick.com. Where you can actually add your opinions. So far we've got 9 opinions, only a few of which actually have to do with the question. My favorite so far is number 7. The question is, have you had any update surprises? Number 7 says, only with my haircut. Very humorous. And while you're there, take a look around. I do newsletters and forums, and that leads me to what I almost talked about before we moved on at the end of the hour. One of the things that I do is I send out this newsletter that has all kinds of stuff in it. One is tips and tricks and website of the week and rants and raves and questions and answers and all kinds of things. One of the things that I put out last time was how you can fix a scratched CD with a banana. This guy actually had a banana, cut the banana, peeled it, cut it, and took a cut end. And rubbed the scratched CD, and then polished it with the inside of the peel, and it played. So one of our favorite people, IronWire, who is on both the Soundbites forum and Ask Nick, performed a full scientific experiment on this thing. He burned a dozen CDs, checked all of them to make sure they played. Then he built a device that scratched all 12 of them the exact same way, played them to make sure they didn't play. And then he did it with a ripe banana, a very old banana, and a couple of dozen other things. Indeed, the ripe banana worked fine. The old banana sort of worked mostly, but it wasn't as good. Tried a bunch of other things. The big winner, Turtle Wax F21.
Yeah, because basically you're filling in the crack on the coating. Now, if the scratch is deep enough to actually hurt the reflective layer, then you're pretty much out of luck.
Right. Yeah. But that's very rare. And so he did this whole scientific method. and gave rise to a new phrase on the Ask Nick website, the full banana. And
almost sounds like something Andy Inako has done. He's a prolific Mac columnist, and he's been on the CBS Morning News quite recently doing little tests like that. And in one of them, he took six identical cell phones and threw them in a fountain.
Right.
And the news anchor woman in the studio just had this horrified look on her face. What is he doing? And so they did a test on how to dry out electronics, you know, cell phones, iPods, iPhones, anything like that. And it turns out that the two best ways are burying it in uncooked white rice, which draws out the water, and Fresh Step brand kitty litter.
I don't doubt that.
Or any type of kitty litter that has the clumping action, right, because it draws out the fluid.
Anyway, I want to personally give my kudos to IronWire for his exhaustive scientific methodology. I was very, very impressed. And I just want to let everybody know that he went way above and beyond the call of duty here. All right. Our next caller is
line one, whoever's on that.
Who's on line one?
Hello?
Terry.
Yes.
Hi, Terry. Where are you calling from?
From Henrietta.
Ah.
Are you taking over the call log now?
All right. I am. Thank you. Terry from Henrietta. What's your question, Terry?
For Open Office, how do you change the language to Spanish? We go under tools, see the language. The drop-down menu says thesaurus and hyphenation, and there's no option. When you go under thesaurus, it doesn't give you the Spanish as an option. It has other languages, but that's only under the thesaurus. So I wondered, is there a way to change it to type in Spanish?
Okay, so you're in Open Office and you want to change it to Spanish.
Yes.
You have to download the language pack separately?
The language packs are available up on the openoffice.org website.
Oh, okay.
So I don't know exactly where you would find those on there. Give me a half a second here to look. But you can find them easily. There are a bunch of language packs that are available.
Google Open Office language packs. That'll probably find it.
Okay.
Are you running Windows or are you running Linux?
Windows.
Okay, then you're going to have to download the language packs. They're certainly available.
58 megabytes for all languages.
Oh, okay.
I'll have the link posted shortly.
There's dozens and dozens and dozens of languages that are available in OpenOffice.
Okay.
And for those of you who are listening,
the actual number is 90.
There you go. There are 90 languages available, some of which are left to right, others of which are right to left.
Okay. Zulu, Zoshu, Wynakiu, Venezuelan language.
Right.
The native Venezuelan language.
Right. But it's all out there, so it's easy and easy. It's doable.
Okay.
Okie doke.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. That's a very nice thing. Our next caller is online too, and that would be
George.
George, welcome, George. What's your question?
I've got the rest of them, Rob.
Hello.
George, where are you calling from?
Henrietta, New York.
Henrietta, New York. What's your question, George?
Oh, this is a more of a comment on what you said about XP.
Yeah.
On Tuesday, PC World published an article that says that, according to NeoSpark Technology, Windows XP SP3 build 3205 was released to beta testers on Sunday. And now, along with the further out of the article, it says that it's going to include this NAP, which you were talking about before. So, and they're going to release this sometime in 2008.
Yeah, it's a Service Pack 3 for XP. So clearly they're not entirely done with XP.
No.
If they're releasing new service packs, they're surely moving on with it. I don't know what their story is at this point.
Well,
one of the ironies is that Microsoft says that they've sold 60 million copies of Vista. Those are copies they've sold. How many of those copies are sitting in warehouses, on store shelves? How many people are actually using Vista?
Well, the other thing, too, is just a month ago, it's just been a month, Microsoft came out with Service Pack 2C. And what that did was for OEMs, give them the capabilities to print more of the key codes because they were running out of numbers. So they had to do a patch so that they could generate more of these key codes because they're still selling Windows XP. And that was just a month ago. So if you got a system that's supposedly dying, why would you create a patch to keep generating sales.
Right. Because it's not,
because it's not sales.
Yep.
It's not sales. That's all free stuff. The downloads are free.
No, this was for OEM people to be able to generate the stickers that they put on the side of the machine.
Yeah, but see, this is the deal. I can sell you a new machine with Vista on it, mm-hmm. or I can sell you a new machine with XP on it. If I sell it to you with Vista, I get all the old XP people who have to upgrade. If I only sell it to you with XP, I lose all those old people. My customers, the shareholders, are going to be very unhappy about that.
Oh, yeah. Definitely.
That's why there's Vista.
Yep.
It has nothing to do with you. It has nothing to do with service or quality or it's got nothing to do with nothing but shareholders. All right. Our next caller is.
Wait a minute, Nick.
Oh, whoa. Wait.
Yeah, I had another question. I had my computer unplugged for quite a few days. And when I turned it back on, when I finally got to the startup page, the toolbar, instead of being a normal blue, this is Windows XP Home Edition.
Right.
It was white-like, which I knew there was something wrong. So what I did is I restored, used the system restore, and then it came back to the moved back a couple of weeks and came back to where it was. My question is, do you think that could be the battery?
The battery is unlikely to be the cause of that.
That would cause you to lose time.
Yeah, the date and time could be zeroed.
Right. That's how you would know the battery was dying.
Although most people don't notice that anymore because one of the first things your computer does is get on the internet and sync your date and time.
Right, exactly. The thing that might cause the bottom panel to change color is generally speaking, that would be a set. You can set that. You can actually change that by hand. So I don't know how that would set.
That could be spyware.
Accidentally, yeah. I suppose it could be. That's about the only thing I can think that it might be.
Or someone else was using your machine earlier and changed
mm-hmm.
the colors.
Oh, I see that happen.
Yeah, that happens a lot. I had somebody calling me up constantly. Some program has changed my background. Well, did they change it to porn or what? No, it's just different. It turns out, of course, it was his wife
mm-hmm.
who didn't like his background, kept changing it back. She assumed that it was just coming back because that's the way it had been set. So she changed it to what she liked. Then he changed it back and she changed it back. And I thought, you know, if you talk to each other,
might change.
That might be good. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Chris Reich, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and you. Got some folks on the line, but there are a couple lines open if you want to call in. We'll be back with Sound Bites on 1180 WHAM.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. 1, turn your radio down. 2, turn your radio down lower. 3, remember, nobody has invented a good sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4, make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5, calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. 6, if you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And 7, is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
All right, welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Reich.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, it's Sound Bites.
Is this the Weird Al version? No. They were the Weird Al version. Another one rides the bus.
Why me?
Why not you? It's got to be somebody. Might as well be you. Why should it be me? All right, we're back.
You encourage them.
I do encourage them. I do. It's true. And I feel bad about that. You have no idea.
No, you don't.
No, I don't, actually. Not at all. Not even a little bit. No. No, no, no. There was an exploit released for Word for the Mac, and I think we should talk about that. Yet again, an exploit has been released into the wild within days of Microsoft announcing the vulnerability. An exploit has been found in the wild for a Word vulnerability Microsoft patched on October 9th. Symantec said in a posting on October 10th that it had gotten its hands on a Word for Mac document that contained shellcode and three pieces of malware. The file kept crashing Symantec's Word programs, with the exception of Office 2007, until the security company determined it had been created using Word for the Macintosh. So if you get a Word document that crashes your Windows system, you know it's Word for the Mac with this problem in it. The document was, in fact, rigged to exploit a flaw that Microsoft had already seen in the wild and which the company patched earlier this week. The fast turnaround from Patch Tuesday to an exploit being released into the wild is a trend that shows no sign of slowing down. The good news is with this one is that at least the default configurations in Office 2007 and Office 2003 Service Pack 3 offer protection to Windows users by preventing users from opening certain Office file formats, including Office for Macintosh documents. So those of you who are using Office for the Mac and thinking you're going to be sharing it with people running Office for everything else, well, too bad.
Well, it was a little surprising that two Microsoft Office updates had come out in like a week. I think they're up to 11.3.8 now, which is weird. So what's interesting is I can't find any comment on what the malicious file actually does. Apparently, it's just the file there, and it doesn't do anything. So it's almost a proof of concept, but it made it in the wild. It's the first time it's made it to the wild.
Right, exactly. All right, our next caller is Tom from Fairport, New York. Welcome, Tom. What's your question?
Hey, guys. Good morning. I'd like to get your opinion. I want to run some racing simulation games on my home PC, and I need to get a new video card. So I wanted your opinions on what you thought the best video card for under $300 would be in the market at this point in time. I'm going to hang up and listen. Thanks very much, guys.
Sure. Well, first,
it's a very subjective answer.
Yeah, it really is. But first, it depends on what racing games you're using. Do they recommend a specific card?
That's what I would recommend.
Each game probably recommends a different one.
Yeah, right.
I would check on the side of the box, and they'll usually have a broad spectrum of cards that they recommend.
My personal favorite is NVIDIA.
Same here.
My personal recommendation is 512 meg of RAM.
NVIDIA doesn't sell cards themselves, do they? They sell chipsets to other manufacturers, whereas ATI is the other major video card company. They actually sell their own cards under their own brand name. So
but again,
it's kind of interesting
still,
that way.
We don't want to, with these games,
I bought a GeForce card. Said GeForce on the box. That's NVIDIA.
Right, but was it an NVIDIA brand, or was it like a Daytac or some other brand? Yeah.
But the key thing is he's got to check the side of the game. We can recommend what our favorites are, but if that game doesn't support it, which I find kind of hard that it wouldn't support the NVIDIA, because that's one of the most popular along with ATI, but definitely check the models, because there's certain models within NVIDIA that... You're saying that you only want to spend up to $300. Well, you might have to spend maybe a little bit more to get the performance that you really want with the online games.
And each game has its own requirements, and each game may have different video card suggestions. So trying to find one to overlap is
interesting. And I don't like going with just the suggested minimum.
No, never go with the minimum.
You'll
just simply be disappointed in another 3 months when the next game has a new minimum.
I just put in a $1,700 video card for a customer. It's dual link. It'll drive twin 30-inch monitors, and it has a stereo port on it, so you can plug a stereo monitor into it. Ooh. It was gorgeous.
Nice. Now, we had a question about overmodulation, and you guys had an answer?
Oh, we were just going to post that in the chat and not talk about it on the air.
Oh.
Sorry.
I think it's fascinating that we've got... all this technology that we're using.
And it doesn't work.
And it doesn't
work. It works just fine.
No,
thank
it works
you
fine.
Very much.
It works fine. Chris is an audio engineer. And he's helping us make things right. Among other things. And we've got three entirely separate devices recording the show.
That's right. And I didn't actually see the comment on overmodulation. What does it actually say?
It just basically, you know, you can always scroll back up to it.
You can.
There have been some issues with the last couple of in a few shows recently. Chris was out of town 1 week, and so one of the recordings didn't record at all. So we used the other two recordings, and he basically picks the best of the three, and sometimes mixes and matches.
Right, we record with three different devices: two of them here in the studio, and one in my apartment. And as Steve just said, we pick the best one. I process it. I do a lot of editing and make it sound the best I can. I wish I knew what the comment was about overmodulation.
Just
I'm
looking
at
waveforms. It seems to be overmodulated.
Yeah.
Which episode?
Okay, that's the question. Which episode? The September 30th episode, I believe, is one that was taken off the air. So it was edited from an off-the-air recording. That one should probably sound a little different from the others. I question the term overmodulation.
Right.
Because I'm looking at waveforms on my monitor at home when I do the editing. There's no overmodulation in recent episodes. Some of the very early ones, yes, because we were tweaking recording levels.
Right. All right, so there's your answer.
We're working on it. And then Nick is working on the feed code so that the new updates, the new episodes download automatically.
I think we know what the problem is.
Right now you have to go to the website and download them manually.
Yep. All right, so we're working on it. It's not happening as easily as we or quickly as we'd like, but it is happening. Our next caller is Rachel from Buffalo, New York. Welcome, Rachel.
Actually, before we go there,
Rachel, hold on.
If anyone knows of a good MP3 tag editor for the Mac, I've tried half a dozen of them, and I can't find a really good one that supports all the extended tags. We're trying to put the call log and maybe the link list into the description field of the podcast, and I'm having trouble with that. We're having trouble with carriage returns and line feeds. And the way they look in iTunes versus the way they look in the website versus the way they look on the XML page, it's annoying.
It is annoying. All right, now we're on to Rachel. Thank you for your patience, Rachel. What's your question?
Okay, I'm getting ready to buy a new computer, and I would prefer a laptop with a display larger than 15 inches, and I've always used Macs in the past. I can use a PC, but I prefer Macs. And the main point is I want to be able to scan handwritten text in from a notebook and have it translated into something I can use with a word processor. Is this possible, and what do I need?
Well, Apple has a built-in program called Ink that will let you handwrite on a tablet, and it converts it to text. But OCRing scanned handwriting is virtually impossible.
Okay.
You can OCR typewritten. OCR is optical character recognition. You can OCR typewritten text, but handwritten text is virtually impossible. I'm going to do some Google searching and see if there's anything here for it.
The only things I know that do that right now are the tablet PCs.
Well, no, you have to actually write on the tablet.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying.
Right.
And you do it on the tablet.
Right, same thing on the Mac.
You
write on your tablet and it converts it to text.
Right.
She wants to take a scanned image of someone's handwriting and convert it to text. You could trace over it on your tablet, and that would do it.
Sounds like something beyond the limits of current technology.
Well, not conceptually. I mean, if it can read your handwriting what it's really reading is the strokes as it goes. So that's different from reading the ink forms on the paper. We'll look into that, Rachel, but I don't know of anything off the top of my head.
All right. Thank you very much.
I'm seeing a lot of research companies researching the issue.
Yeah, Kurzweil used to be huge.
Yeah, Kurzweil is probably one of the biggest OCR companies. And they target a lot of visually impaired users because you put your book down and then scan it. But scanning handwritten text is tricky because of the whole handwriting recognition issue.
Because people's handwriting is usually pretty bad. Right. Okay, Rachel, thank you very much. We'll keep looking into that when our next caller is Andy from Greece, New York. Welcome, Andy. What's your question?
Good afternoon.
Yep.
Two things. In this morning's newspaper column, you were talking to a gentleman. He wanted to export his stuff out of Explorer into Thunderbird. And one of his things was he could only get his stuff. He couldn't get his wife's. And if I understand XP correctly, it's multiple user. So when he tried to export or import into Thunderbird his Explorer setting, he was only going to get his own. He'd have to log off and log back in as his wife to get hers.
I'm assuming you mean Outlook because Explorer doesn't go into Thunderbird.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Yes.
Outlook has its own multiple users built in called identities. So you don't actually log out of your XP account. You switch identities in Outlook Express and then do the import into Thunderbird again, and it gets that second identity or third and fourth.
Exactly, and that I think is the answer I gave in the paper. I wrote it weeks ago, so I don't really remember, but I think that's what I said in the paper.
Yeah, anyway, now to get to my question.
Yeah.
Was going through my users, looking at the user accounts to make sure they were, from my administrator account to look like they, make sure they were set up correctly. The box is got 2000 Pro on it. And as I was looking down through my users, one popped up that I hadn't created called ASP.net.
Yep. That one is created by Windows.
At no extra charge?
At no extra charge.
You downloaded an update without knowing it.
Yeah. That's exactly what happened. ASP.net is a user that Microsoft creates to help it do various things on your computer. That may make you happy or unhappy, but doesn't matter to them. That's what they're doing. Big question is who actually owns your computer, you or Microsoft. And that's a user they create to do stuff. So it's there. Good luck. Have fun.
So, I removed it. So
you have been
It'll
owned.
Be back.
It'll come back.
No, you could stop it if you do, instead of doing the automatic updates, if you do custom updates, change it to custom updates.
Well, that's the way I always do it.
And you select, don't do the .NET updates.
Yeah, you have to know that the Microsoft.NET update creates the ASP.NET file. So if right. you don't know that, you'll just let that update come in.
Right.
Okay. Now that you know, you can stop it.
Yeah, I generally tend to stay away from anything.
Well, what you can do is so you don't get haunted by that one again, is if you know, it'll be checked, uncheck it, and click on a little plus sign. And within the body of that, you can check the little box within it and says, don't remind me about this one anymore.
Okay.
There you go.
Works for me.
Thanks so much.
And I have sort of a partial answer to the previous question about scanning handwriting.
From Rachel.
There are a couple, I found a couple of tips that you can sometimes do. Programs like Adobe Illustrator have a, streamline option, where it'll take so you can scan your handwriting in, and it will create a vector trace of your handwriting. Then you can do a little more work with, making it bigger, making it smaller, but it's still only just a scan. But once you have that vector trace, you can sometimes then send it through an OCR program, and OmniPage is the biggest one on the Mac. Read Iris is the other common one, and they typically come with your scanner. You can try sending it in there and seeing how well it works. But in general, everyone is saying, yeah, you can't really OCR handwriting.
Right. I've been looking for something that will translate audio into written text. Not from the microphone.
Right? Dragon on the PC and iListen on the Mac, you can use, you still have to train the voice. So if it's your voice on a recording, especially if it's a digital recording, you can feed that as the input.
Right.
And then it's speech dictation software that turns the speech into text. But if it's someone else's voice, you have to get them to train your dictation software.
Right. Yeah.
And ironically enough, both OmniPage and Dragon are from Nuance. Nuance has been buying
everybody.
This, the different type of input technologies.
Yep. All right. Our next caller is John from Webster, New York. Welcome, John. What's your question?
Well, I got a little issue. I'm trying to help a friend of mine out. Her computer.
Oh, here we go. It's always a friend, not me. It's always a friend.
Oh, my computer's been dead for 2 weeks. I'm not worried about that. But she calls me up, and I go over to look at the computer, and as it's booting up, it's going through the boot sequence, and it says i13 not initialized, BIOS not initialized. And then it goes to boot up Windows XP, and it immediately goes to the blue screen of death after about 15 seconds and says system memory dump, and then it just cycles itself back around again. Any ideas?
Yeah, I think you might have...
Is it i13 or int13?
I like the int13.
Yeah, the int13 BIOS. That's the really core low level of the BIOS.
Yeah, and 10-to-1 add, you're looking at a new machine.
That's what I was figuring.
Yeah, well, a new motherboard.
A new BIOS. If you're fortunate enough to have your BIOS on a removable chip, you
most
can try.
Most of those nowadays are surface mounted.
Yep.
It is a Dell motherboard, so I'm guessing it's probably all integrated.
How old of a machine is it?
Well, it's a Pentium 4 1.5. It's nothing huge.
Yeah.
It's probably time to upgrade anyway.
Tell her, you know, Christmas is coming. You two should, since yours is dead and hers is dead now, see if you can get a deal on buying two of them.
There you go. We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Chris Reich, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 39 minutes after the hour. Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Reich.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 43 minutes after the hour, you're listening to Soundbites. Before we get back to the phones, why don't I just drop stuff all over the floor? A very cool thing is happening. The Internet Domain Names Group, ICANN, I-C-A-N-N, those are the people who give us things like soundbites.org and et cetera, are about to trial non-Latin language domain names. And what it says is one of the biggest changes ever to the net. It starts on Monday, and Internet users around the globe will be able to access wiki pages with the domain name example test in 11 test languages, Arabic, Persian, Chinese, both simplified and traditional, Russian, Hindi, Greek, Korean, Yiddish, Japanese, and Tamil. This evaluation represents ICANN's most important step so far towards the full implementation of internationalized domain names, or IDNs. See, the deal here right now is doing things in your own language was possible up until the dot something. So you could have Arabic word dot com. Now you had to switch to English. And if your language went from left to right, you'd write from left to right, hit the dot, and have to write from right to left. It was just very confusing, very painful for everybody. What they're now talking about is the top-level domains like .net, .com, .info, UKD, that are at the core of the internet will now be available in an other language.
Yeah, it's especially difficult in the non-Roman languages, Cyrillics and Asians and Arabics.
Well, wait a minute. Shouldn't they just go to Al Gore and ask him how he wanted it?
Sure, they should. Guy's got a Nobel Peace Prize now. He's sitting Zazen. He's sitting in doing meditation now. He's got
Since
a peace
he designed
prize.
It, shouldn't he have the final say?
He should have the final say. Okay. You think he'd do something about it. So right now, the ASCII characters A through Z are used for top-level domains, and now they'll be able to use whatever tens of thousands of characters from all the languages of the world. So it'll be interesting to see where that takes us and who it tends to lock out. You know, we might say, well, that locks out all us English speakers. Well, right now it's locking out all of them.
They outnumber us.
And they outnumber us by a lot. So that's something where I'm hoping to see gets done. Our next caller is Joe from Rochester, New York. Hiya, Joe. What do you know?
Hello. This is kind of like a two-question. First of all, I got an HP all-in-one printer, and it seems to be running very slow all of a sudden. Has the ink cartridges got anything to do with it? And second is, what do you know about the Kodak printer besides that the ink is supposedly cheaper, about, you know, the operations?
Well, on the HP, is it slower getting the document to the printer, or is the mechanical head actually moving slower in the printer as it prints?
I think it must be moving slower because it's not printing out. You know, it prints out, but it takes forever.
Right.
Well, yeah, this still could be the data getting to the printer, not the head moving slower.
It's doing too many other things than trying to send the stuff to the printer.
If it is the head of the printer, that can happen for a couple of different reasons. One is that there are sensors in the print head. Is this an inkjet?
Yeah.
Yeah. There are sensors in the print head that says how much ink is actually getting out, and it may be that those heads are clogged. How old is this printer?
It's about 3 years old.
Yep, and how much do you use it?
Quite a bit, because I scan with it also, so it ink just out.
It's a catch-22. If you don't use it enough, the ink dries up and clogs. If you use it too much, the ink clogs.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So
in the HP utility, and often even on the front panel of the printer, there is a head cleaning procedure that will clean the heads off, and that might help.
Oh, yeah, I would try that. Yeah, it'll waste ink.
It uses a little bit of ink, yeah. And that's one of the tricks. A lot of people will turn the printer on, print something, turn the printer off. With most printers, every time you turn it on, it does a little bit of a head cleaning and uses some ink. So every time you turn it on and off, you're using up your ink.
But if you leave it on all the time, you never clean the heads, and there's your other problem.
So yeah, turn it on in the morning, turn it off at night.
Right.
And then as far as the Kodak printers, we've heard good things about them. One of the things that I've been trying to find and can't anywhere is how much ink is actually in the tank. The Kodak is touting that their inks cost about half as much as other companies. Well, Consumer Reports did a special on ink tanks a couple years ago, house brand inks versus OEM inks versus company inks. And they found that a lot of the, like, office supply store inks, they're cheaper because there's less ink in the tank.
Yeah.
So how much ink is Kodak actually putting in the tank? I haven't been able to find any information on that.
Right. Yeah, well, that's what I was wondering about is, you know, because it is cheaper, supposedly. If I'm looking at the operational type thing, the HP, I do use it a lot, so it ain't print out a lot of emails.
Well, and that,
scanning.
I would suggest that you do a thorough cleaning of the heads using the software either in the HP software on your computer or from the front panel and see if that doesn't fix the problem.
And
if it doesn't, it might just be that the printer is getting old and slowing down.
Sometimes you can take the cartridges out, use a Q-tip with a little bit of isopropanol, and
start with the built-in one. We got to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Rake, Chris Reich, Rob Linton, and me, Nick Francesco. It's 49 minutes after the hour. Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Rake.
I'm Chris Reich.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 53 minutes after the hour, it's Soundbites. Our next caller is Tom on a cell phone with more information about Kodak Printers and Ink. Welcome, Tom.
Say, I just wanted to pass along that I think in the last PC magazine, they had an article where they evaluated HP. I'm not sure where they did Lexmark, but I think Kodak. And they evaluated it not only from how much ink you could get out of the cartridge, but the overall cost of the printer, the initial investment, and how much you used it. So we may want to look into that to get a feel for how cost-effective it is to go Kodak.
Yeah, and I also found some information on Kodak's own website, so take that with a grain of salt, that the actual cost of printing the same number of pages is more with competitors because you have to buy more ink, implying that their ink tanks are possibly bigger.
Kodak's ink
tanks. That Kodak tanks are bigger, or that what commonly happens is most of the third-party, the other printer companies, they come with starter inks a lot of times and not a full tank. So you have to buy more ink to print the same 500-page tests that Kodak themselves did. Right. So, of course, you go to HP's site, and they'll probably say something the other way. So,
yeah, right.
So yeah, we'll find the PC Magazine. Do you remember how long ago it was?
In the past couple months.
All right, we'll see what we can find.
All righty.
Thanks.
Enjoy.
Appreciate it, Tom. All right, our next caller is Tom again, but this time he's calling from Greece. That was very fast driving, Tom.
Yeah. I have a question. I just bought a used desktop. It's got Pentium 4 in it, and it came with XP Pro, and I'm using it to replace a old Pentium 2 that I have. Mm-hmm. Now, when I plugged it into the internet, I got a message about the authenticity of the program.
Yeah.
So my question is, can I take my software program that I'm having my one that I'm getting rid of? I still got the disk. And which is XP Home, could I use that to overwrite XP Pro?
Here's the problem.
Maybe.
Yeah. You'll actually run into the same problem that you're running into now. When you sell a computer or give a computer away or do anything you want to a computer, you're supposed to wipe off the operating system or transfer the title.
By writing a letter to each software company asking for a transfer of license.
Right. And one of those software companies is Microsoft. You make contact with them and say you're selling the machine and you'd like to transfer the license. They then do that. Obviously, that did not happen in this case. So when the person at the other end bought a new machine and said, this is my license now, the license that you've got is theoretically now on two machines. And maybe that they kept the license.
But if you're junking the other machine that you've got the XP Home on, you can put it on this one, and then when you're going to have to call to register it. When you call into Microsoft, you just tell them that you scrapped the other machine and that you're moving that license from that old machine that is now scrapped to this newer machine.
See, Microsoft's operating systems, all of them now, phone home and say what machine they're on, and all machines have unique identifiers built into them. So if Microsoft sees that you've got the same operating system installed on two machines, they can say, I'm sorry, this one's not authorized, and shut you down. So you have to call them and say, dump the old one and I'm keeping the new one, so that they don't shut you down.
Now, of course, they don't want you to do that. They want you to pay for the new one.
Right. Is that semi-clear, Tom?
Well, yes, but I knew that. But my question is, I have XP Home, and I want.
Yes, and Dave answered that. He said you've got to call Microsoft.
Oh, okay.
And tell them that you want to move it from the old machine to the new machine.
Okay.
Before you can do that.
Okay.
Yeah, you can. Like I said, when you're installing it on this new machine, your old copy of XP Home onto this new machine that has Pro.
When you go to activate it.
When you go to activate it, you're going to have to tell them, because you're going to get on the line and say, all right, why are you doing this? You already had a register. You just tell them that you're scrapping that old machine that died and that you're putting it on this new one.
Okay.
And they'll give you, they'll have you on the phone typing in a new ID.
Do I have to reformat the hard drive? Or?
Yes, you're going to have to, because you're technically, believe it or not, going backwards. Going from Pro to Home, you're going to have to format the drive.
Yeah, you won't be able to keep any of the old stuff.
All right, so that's okay. So that's what I want to do. So I should then format the hard drive, then reload the...
Well, when you're loading the operating system, it'll give you the chance to format it.
Oh, okay.
All right?
All right.
And then in the middle of that, he'll have to call Microsoft.
Okay.
So you want to try to do that during some time when there's somebody on the phones at Microsoft. is a whole other thing. Well, the music in the background and the positions of Mickey's hands tell me it's about time for us to move along. I want to thank Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Chris Reich, Rob Linton for all their very hard work, particularly Chris, who is making three entirely separate recordings of this show and then coagulating.
And some days they're all crap.
That's it. Well, we're working on all of that, but it's the way it works. And I'm
not
Nick
recording
Francesco.
The content. Yeah.
Right. The content is always crap. That's a whole other story. I'm Nick Francesco, and we want to thank you for listening. Want to apologize to everyone to whom we did not get. I want to thank everyone who did call in. It's Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.